Welcome back to the final show of Monty and Afaro at the Great Indie Music Studios. And we have a special guest. You know, Jimmy, I want to take the time to thank this guest, right? Because, number one, he's a sponsor, right? And by the way, we have to cut a commercial for him. I know we've been trying to get our act together for a bit, so we got to get that worked out. And we can do that when you're back here in New York next week. But the guy has been a friend of the show, right? You know, anytime we need anything from him, he's there. Whether it's coming on the show as a guest, hooking us up with guests, you know, author of the Bruno Sammartino book. And I'm going to call him the godfather of the meet and greets, Sal Corrente. So I want to personally, for both of us, thank Sal for the support that he's given Monty Nefaro over the years. Thoughts on that comment, Jimmy?
Oh, I couldn't agree more, you know. And the godfather of the get together, huh? That's some pretty big shoes to fill there, but I think that he's done that. And he's gotten some great, didn't he recently get you Ricky and the Fabulous Ones?
He did. Yes, he did. And,
nice.
Got to tell you, for us to have the opportunity to interview Ricky Steamboat of the Fabulous Ones, it was pretty incredible.
Amazing.
Pretty incredible.
Amazing stuff. Yeah, I'm pretty jealous, you know, that I did miss those. That was obviously very painful. Very painful, Mike. Very painful. Really have to go into my pain?
I certainly didn't want you to feel pain there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Holy Magnum TA, Batman. Anyway.
Wow. Yo, Jimmy, you missed a couple of good interviews. I didn't realize.
I did. Yeah, but at least I got to watch you talking to them. So that was like, you know, I get half the cake, right? You know,
that's right.
I mean,
but just think.
The cake tasted really good, by the way.
In a week and 2 days, you're going to have one of the greatest wrestlers of all time to interview, Jerry the King Lawler. That's going to be.
I just want to know one thing. Is he any chance he could sign my puppies?
He could. You could ask. And you got some puppies, too.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. Wait a minute.
Sal.
You know, I mean, do you think... Is he out there?
Sal, how are you, buddy? It's glad to see
I'm
you,
here.
Man. I see you. How you doing, pal?
There he is.
Thanks for joining us, man.
No problem. No problem at all. Always a pleasure.
How you doing, buddy? What's going on?
I'm just enjoying the warm weather in Florida. A little rainy today, but...
There we go.
It's warm. That's why I moved here, so... Try to all keep right. My winters here if at all possible.
So, Sal, I got to ask you. Do you have a laugh? I never see you laugh, man. You must be very hard to get a smile and a laugh out of. You are always very businesslike, stoic.
He's like, working right.
What can we do to make you laugh, Sal?
Right now.
Well, believe it or not, I'm actually the one that makes everybody else laugh. But, yeah, I mean, this is it's an interview. I don't, you know, it's not a comedy act. Believe me, I can assure you I make people laugh all the time. But I've never really taken that mindset in a podcast.
Well, we're gonna break that smile.
Well, that takes care of that.
Yeah, it does. It's like, whoa, okay, Sal, take it easy. Take it easy. I don't want to piss you off.
Back to work, Monty. Back to work. That's great.
I'm going to find myself buried in the back of Sheephead's Bay in a minute if I keep pushing.
That's Sheephead Bay, by the way. It's not Sheephead's Bay. Sheephead's Bay. Sal, where are you in Florida? I'm in Panama City Beach. Where are you?
I'm about almost as far away from you as possibly could be. I'm down in the Boca Raton area.
Wow. He is funny, Mike. He's as far away from me as can possibly be.
That is
pretty
funny.
Right? You're one end of the state to the other, and it's a long drive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big-ass state, too. I'm starting to realize that very quickly. Mike, go to a baseball game. The nearest stadium is 5 hours from here. I give up.
Well.
Yeah, the nearest almost anything is 5 hours from there, unless you're into college sports,
there
I guess.
You go.
Wow. Sal, not a big sport in Panama City, buddy.
Wait a minute! It's beautiful here.
It's all fine, but if you're looking for major league sports, you're not going to get them in Northern Florida.
No, he's right. No, he's right. But I do have the Seminoles. At least I got Florida State, like you said. So there's that. All right, Mike. Right. That's enough with the college sports. What do you got, big guy?
So I want to ask both of you. Right, I'm a huge pro wrestling documentary guy. Right, and obviously, Rivals is back on A&E, and now you got the bios, and they opened up with Randy Orton in show one. But the second show was Sergeant Slaughter. Okay, so, Sal, just so you know, when I met Jimmy, I hated professional wrestling. Way back, a long time ago, when I wasn't fat and I actually had some hair.
Right.
But he introduced me to wrestling, and Sergeant Slaughter is the guy that got me into wrestling. And before I go, I'm going to ask you guys, but Jimmy and Sal, you kind of forget things that happened. But during this bio, they show when Slaughter comes back to the WWE after being in Mid-Atlantic and after his first run here. And he steps out of the locker room. He's still a heel. And he comes face-to-face with the Iron Sheik. And we're watching wrestling for a bit at that point, and to see two bad guys facing off like that, and obviously went to the boot court match at the end where you and me, Jimmy, watching MSG. I was getting chills. You were talking about chills the first show, Jimmy. I was getting chills remembering that. And by the way, they showed the Pat Patterson boot camp match, where he was wearing a shirt, and I actually went online to see if I could buy that shirt. It had Pat Patterson Slaughter to boot camp match. I'll start with you, Sal. I know you're a wrestling godfather, but you were a fan too. What were your thoughts on Sergeant Slaughter?
He was a great heel. He really was. He would get under your skin, and he knew how to piss people off, and but, you know, with the whole Iran crisis and, you know, Cosgrove being there, and it just made sense to do what they did with him. And he was lucky Cosgrove was there to work with. And the way he was and the way America was at that time, I mean, he just rode that thing and is still riding it. And, you know, God bless him. And I was there at the Garden for the boot camp match. And, I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, when I talked to Pat Patterson about that and the steel cage match he had with Backlund, he said, when I watch those matches, I'm not even sure how I did it myself. So I was always a fan of Sarge's work. I was closer to the Iron Sheik than I was to Sergeant Slaughter. But, you can't take anything away from Slaughter. I mean, he was a great, great worker. But in this business, sometimes it's more about timing than it is anything. And all the pieces just fell right into place there. And, you know, Slaughter was a guy that could take the ball and run with it.
Can I ask you, you said you were at the boot camp match, right? And the Pat Patterson, what did they had four matches at the Garden, Backlund and Patterson, right? When you look back at those matches now, and I don't know if you do, but if you go on the network, does it lose its shine? Are you like, oh, boy, this was not as good as I thought it was?
Not to me. I mean, that's the era of pro wrestling I'm from. You know, everything goes through evolutions. What's happening today? I mean, these guys are doing some dangerous stuff and this, that, and the other. But it's a different business. And, you know, I'm not working for any of the big companies these days. So, it's never going to lose it. If anything, it takes me back to what I consider to be a better time when people believed. I mean, if you just watch some of the things from Allentown and the TV tapings, and I mean, these people were rabid, just like they were. You know, that was where Slaughter and the Sheik faced off. Patterson and the Cobra Challenge, that was in Allentown. Everybody got into everything. If you watch to me, it's all about the crowd reaction. Today, most of the time, the crowd is just looking to see who's going to go over and how, or what kind of crazy thing somebody might do. There are a lot of old school fans who will tell you they don't like what's going on today. But at the same token, you have to be realistic. There was a time in history when all wrestling was on the mat. Well, at some point, somewhere, somebody decided to throw a drop kick. somebody decided they were going to take a backdrop. Well, that must have seemed as crazy to people who never saw wrestlers get off the mat. Right? So at this point now, we're just at a different stage. It's the same business in theory, but the way it's presented is much different.
What about you, Jimmy, on Sergeant Slaughter?
Well, Sergeant Slaughter, you know, it's funny with Sergeant Slaughter. He gets all the credit he should as a heel, but he obviously was the face when he worked with Sheik, and he played that incredibly well, too. What did he not do in this business? He has been the bad guy most of it, and he's been a top-shelf bad guy. And then when he was asked to be a good guy, it was just easy. Like Sal said, the timeline of Sergeant Slaughter's career perfectly parallels with Sergeant Slaughter's characters and how he was being booked. It was just a basically a pipe dream. Even at the end, even though I was burnt out on him when he was champion, hey, he was champion because he was trusted, like Sal said. He was able to take the ball and run with it. He was obviously a pretty damn good company. And look at him. Look at that profile. Look at that jaw. How could he not be Sergeant Slaughter? I mean, it was perfect for him. Physically, what else could he have ever played that would have been more natural than that? So it was perfect timing, and everything worked out perfect. Great Slaughter, and I will never forget the alley fight that he had with Pat Patterson, because that's the bloodiest thing I've ever seen. And as far as change in wrestling, I have no problem with it. Like, I can easily go back, for example, to the 70s and watch the old wrestling matches. And I'm right back in that time period. I can do that with my mind. Has wrestling changed? Yeah, but do I still love it? Oh, I still love it. I still love watching matches and wondering who's going to win and doing my best to not get on the internet and hear all the chit-chat. I try to keep it as organic as I can because I still love wrestling itself. You know, I still love baseball. Changed quite a bit. You go back and you watch the 70s with Reggie and Thurman and Goose and how closers were used and how everything was done. It's way different than today's baseball. But, Mike, I'll tell you, if this was the summertime, we'd be going to a Yankee. We could.
Mm.
You know? Baseball is still baseball.
Absolutely.
At the core of everything is a point of origin. Yeah. And that's what makes wrestling still great today. I do agree with Al. I wish that it was still looked at as real. I loved it when it was presented more seriously, you know, because I still take wrestling very seriously, even though the curtain's been ripped wide, wide open and we know all the secrets and all that other stuff. And it's really a shame in a way that we do know all the secrets, because the time that we grew up in and the time that Sal got to know Bruno, and that is a preferable time to me too, because the realism is what sold us on it all.
Absolutely.
It was great. And the announcers were great. And to this day, I know there's a lot of bad things said about Vince, but I know you'll agree with me, Mike. And Sal, I'm curious what you think. Look, if you compare everybody to Gordon Solie, there's nothing to talk about. But I think that Vince McMahon, as an announcer back in the 70s and into the 80s, was very solid at what he did. I was engaged when I listened to Vince call him either Bruno or Pat. You know, I didn't need to know every last move because the moves were a lot fewer than there are today. And I knew what those moves were anyway. I knew what a backdrop was. I knew what a body slam was. I'm not a complete blithering idiot. He didn't have to give me a descriptive blow-by-blow. It was the excitement level and the conviction of Vince as the announcer that I think he gets no credit for today, because probably most of the fans today didn't even know he was an announcer. So
what did you think as Vince as an announcer?
Well, I get to Vince in a second. Just to go back to Slaughter for 1 second, you know, we all talk about the alley fight and this and that, but in North Carolina in Greensboro, when Steamboat and Youngblood wrestled Slaughter and Knoedl, I mean, the traffic was backed up for 30 minutes. The Greensboro Coliseum was insane. If you want to go on YouTube and watch a match, that's the match to watch. I mean, literally...
Nice.
It was absolutely crazy. They had a strong angle with Steamboat and Youngblood, who were an amazing team. And, you know, I can tell you that Slaughter told me personally he wanted Knoedl to be with him in the WWF. Vince would not go for it. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they didn't. And it may have been Vince Sr. I'm not sure. But You know, he pushed him. It didn't make sense to me because the success in North Carolina was there. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were good friends, but he just didn't go for it. But that's a match that rivals anything else that we've talked about with Slaughter.
Sal,
not to put any of the other matches down, but this thing was at the same level as these other ones.
Can I ask you a question about that, though? So that's the first time I heard that Slaughter tried to push Canoodle up here to the WWE.
Well, he was here, but he wanted Canoodle to be his private, just like he was down in North Carolina. He was already he already had a job.
Okay.
And when I talked to him about it, I mean, it's not something I made public. It was the first time I'm really ever repeating it. But you know, in right. the '80s, when I talked to him, because it was obvious that they had huge success in North Carolina, and they brought the other kid right. in, Terry Daniels, who was a good guy, and I had no problem with him. But you took a team that had been ripping up the Mid-Atlantic, and then you didn't put it back together in New York. I'm not sure what sense that made.
Right, right. Didn't they do that, Mike? Didn't they do that with Piper and Valentine? Like, they just had them acknowledge each other instead of doing something with it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I get. But, like, here's my question. Does a guy like Don Canoodle get mad at Bob Slaughter? Because Bob had some heat up here, right? Bob probably could get stuff done. Does the wrestlers get mad when they think their good friend doesn't get them where they need to be?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Don was always fine with Sarge. I've never heard anything different. But listen, Sarge did what he could do, but he wasn't, you know, he believed in Canoodle. He wanted him with him. But, you know, there's times when the promoter just gets in their head what they get in their head, and that's it. You know, they want to go in a different direction for whatever reason.
Right.
Did you continue a relationship with Canoodle after he retired and everything else?
I would see him at events from time to time, but no, not really. Just, you know, he'd come to some of Nelson Royal's shows, and I'd see him, and maybe at a convention here or there. But no, didn't really keep up with him a whole bunch.
Were you upset, Sal, when do you feel his life?
Look, to be honest with you, there are so many deaths in wrestling now, it's becoming somewhat overwhelming. You know, but I think, if I remember correctly, you know, Don was sick, and you know, that what that does to somebody's mind, I don't know. But, you know, I've seen, look, since I started, there have been guys that were, you know, Quick Draw Rick McGraw was a good friend, and you know, he ended up being dead. I mean, you know, so it started from the minute I got into the business, really.
What killed Quick Draw?
Do you become indifferent from?
Well, I just, you know, what can you say? I mean, you hate it, but there's nothing really you can do about it. I just try to just move on. I mean, there's guys that, you know, you were closer to, guys you barely knew. But, you know, when guys are taking unnecessary risks and doing things they shouldn't be doing and making bad decisions, these things are going to happen. I mean, look, it happens every day in real life. You know, wrestlers are no different than any other segment of the population. Some make great decisions, some don't. And, you know, it's unfortunate. That's all I can really say. As far as to get back to Vince and being an announcer, yeah, I thought Vince was a very good announcer. The only thing I would say is his announcers for many, many years had to go with him being in their ear every 2 minutes. And if I say 2 minutes, who knows if it ain't 20 seconds. You know, I don't think anybody was, you know, pounding in his ear, say this, do that. You know, sometimes he did things on the fly if they were running. You know, I saw him one time motion for Putski to sing because they were behind. So Putski was in the last match of the tapings. So he grabbed the microphone and started singing the, you know, polka song or whatever. You know, he was running the show. So it's got to be much more difficult, though, as you're trying to focus and somebody's constantly in your ear. But as far as being an announcer, Vince was totally fine for me.
So let's get a little serious here, because I'm very interested on your thoughts about Vince McMahon and what's presently going on. What are your thoughts about that situation, Sal?
I don't have any thoughts to share. I mean, what are you going to say? Again, this stuff, every day somebody's accused of something. Let the court system play it out and see what happens. I don't know. I didn't know the referee, the girl referee. Don't recall ever even meeting her. Saw her work, of course. And this other person, I'd never heard of her. Let the courts settle it out. But there are times people make decisions, and, you know, those decisions come back to haunt them. But I have no idea. I can't make any case. I believe that the courts will just have to decide innocent or guilty and go from there. If you've got to believe in the justice system, even though sometimes it's challenging. So, I'd like to believe none of it's true. Hmm. But I've been very removed from any of this stuff, and I don't know too much about what's going on with the, like in the 80s, I knew everything that was going on. You know, today I have limited information, and quite honestly, if several of the wrestlers walked past me in the street, I wouldn't know them. Others, I would. Hmm. You know, we used a lot of some of these guys, not a lot. Kevin Owens worked for me with Wrestle Reunion, and it took me about 5 seconds to see him. I looked at Michael from High Spots, and I said, that guy's going to be a star, period. It was about 5 seconds. That's it. I could just tell the way he handled himself. I said, he is going to be a star. Seth Rollins worked for us. The Young Bucks. Trying to remember a lot of the Wrestle Reunion shows in LA were co shows with Ring of Honor. We had them at one day at our convention. Many of these guys were extremely talented, and you could see that they were going to go someplace in the business.
So Sal, when you're doing this Wrestling Reunion thing, right?
It's like, Wrestle Reunion.
How do you get the wrestlers? Like, how do you build a card? How do you know about these independent guys? Do people come to you and say, do the wrestlers contact you? Do promoters come to you? Like, how does that work? And he's frozen. Jimmy, frozen?
I thought I was afraid it was my laptop.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Good.
Wrestling Union started in January of 2005. Now, at that time, there had been a convention going on, and it was, you know, seemed to be pretty successful. But I just felt it was basically just an autograph signing and maybe some picture taking. I wanted to do more. So we decided to put on what ended up being the biggest independent event that has ever been held. Now, you may say there's bigger events now. But most of these events today, there are vendors associated with these events. In this event, the first one in Tampa, everyone worked for me. 95 wrestlers, and they all worked for me. There was only one vendor. It was High Spots. And, that was it. It's, you know, we put together a great card. And, those were all guys that I pretty much knew. The only time I got involved with the promotions was when I wanted to put Dory and Terry Funk together in a tag match for the NWA world title. So I had to get with TNA, Jeff Jarrett, and we wanted Tully Blanchard to work with Jeff Jarrett for the NWA title. So then I got involved with an office. But the card that we put on, I basically, you know, most of these are people I knew, but if I'm being honest about it, what we had planned was pretty big deal. So I went to Bill Apter, who I'd known for a long time, and I said, Bill, I want you to host the event. He said, okay. And so he put his name on it. Then Rob Russin, who was the IWA promoter for many years, took me to Australia and, you know, had me do his TVs and be his booker when we did Sports Channel America and all this stuff. A lot of times I refereed, sometimes I was a manager. And he is the guy who started Diamond Dallas Page. So he called Page, and I went to L.A., sat down and had dinner with Page. And I said, look, this is what we want to do. And he said, well, look, I don't really know you well. I mean, we had worked together, but that was about it. And he said, but Rob says you're okay, so I'll stand up for you too. So, you know, those guys stood up for it, and most people believed then the event probably got a little bit too big. But I think we put on some amazing matches. I mean, only me and Paul Heyman had been able to get Dory and Terry back in the ring together. For it had been a long time, and we're the only two that did it. And, you know, it was challenging, but we got it pulled off. You know, from our first wrestle reunion, Bob Orton, who did not want to work at all, he had no interest in getting back in the ring. As a matter of fact, he said, "Sal, look, I understand if you can't use me, I'll stay home." He said, "But I don't want to work." He said, "I'll come sign autographs. I'll do whatever you want, but I don't want to wrestle." So I flew out to Portland, Oregon. I sat down with Buddy Rose and Colonel DeBeers, and who, you know, I had known both of those guys for quite a while. And I told them what was going on, and I told them I wanted Orton to tag with them against Jimmy Snuka, Roddy Piper, and Jimmy Valiant. And I said, "But Bob's refusing." And I don't even remember exactly what the conversation was. But Buddy said, "Call Bob, tell him I said this." And I can't remember what this is. But when I called Bob, I said, "Look, I was talking to Buddy Rose. He said to tell you this." And Bob started laughing, and he said, "Sal, I'm going to do it for you." So that was all it took, whatever those words were. And then the next thing you know, after that match, he's straight back in the WWF. And Gorgeous Gary Royal, who maybe one day you guys should have on the podcast, he's one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time. He actually made me look good in the ring many, many, many times. And most people that know him will tell you, him and a guy named George South, they were the Gladiators, they were the Cruel Connection, and numerous other things. He was also NWA World Champion, Junior Heavyweight Champion. But he had been in Kansas City with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. So I brought him down and I said, "Who you want to work with?" He said, "Well, I'd love to work with Shawn Michaels." He said, "But I know you can't get him." He said, "How about Marty Jannetty?" So I called Jannetty. I booked him. I don't think he had any idea where he was coming or what he was doing. When he gets to the building, somebody shows him who I am. I'm sure he didn't remember me. I'd worked with him a few times, but I'm sure he didn't remember me. So he came over and he said, "Can you tell me who I'm wrestling?" And I said, "Yeah, Gary Royal." And he said, "You mean the real Gary Royal?" I said, "Yeah, the real one." So, because he was in shock, right? He gets there. The place is packed. Wrestlers all over the place. And he went in the dressing room and he saw Gary, who he probably hadn't seen in, who knows, 15, 20 years. And he said, "How did I get booked on this?" He said, "I told him I wanted to work with you." Well, they went out there and had a great match. Jannetty was back in the WWF shortly after. Now, he didn't last long for, you know, who knows what issues went on. But those guys were booked immediately at a wrestle reunion. For one of our events, we booked Leon White, Big Van Vader. And believe me, that was one of the more challenging things to get done, but I got it done. And we put him on three different shows, and he went back to the WWF after we had him. You know, so the shows were being watched. I mean, everybody was on these things. If you look at the cards on Wikipedia, you know, the matches are crazy. Now, we did have something besides legends. We picked guys to be what we called future legends. One of those guys was CM Punk. He was in the main event of the first Wrestle Reunion. It was Dusty Rhodes, Mike Graham, and Dustin Rhodes against Abdullah the Butcher, Kevin Sullivan, and CM Punk. And I had called Dusty and told him what I wanted to do. Was it okay to use CM Punk? 100% threw his support behind him. I called Mick Foley. He said, put him in there. That's a great idea. And Mick, was the guest referee for that match. But when you're putting all of these guys together, it can be challenging because, first of all, everybody's not young anymore. Many of these guys didn't even consider wrestling anymore. So you have to, you know guys, understand what might make them tick. In some cases, it's money. In some cases, it's the situation. So it's definitely challenging. But most of the people we used were indie guys. Now, I did get a lot of cooperation from WWF over the years. Everybody that works a Wrestle Reunion event literally signs a contract. As we all know, many times guys might be booked somewhere, WWF wants them, well, they leave. Well, in my case, that didn't happen because we had them on contract at all times. Now, we worked with WWF because we don't want to create a problem for the people, you know, the talent, but at the same token, I'm not going to advertise people who aren't coming. You know, that's you don't get people to believe in you that way. So we worked things out. If I needed them to make an accommodation, they did it. If they needed me to make an accommodation, I did it. And I am very proud that I never lost one talent to those guys. And, you know, they knew I wasn't going to let anybody out of it because I just didn't believe, you know, you're putting on a big event and you don't know who's coming to see who, but you don't want to let it go. And, you know, all of these matches, and if you did look on Wikipedia, the first three Wrestle Reunions, we've got the tapes back. Finally, they were tied up in legal for 15 years. I got them back. We made a sizzle reel. Many, many of these people are deceased now. Keep in mind, January 2005, we're almost 20 years in. Some people had their last matches, you know, at Wrestle Reunion. Dr. Death Steve Williams at our second Wrestle Reunion came back, you know, from his challenges with his health. And, you know, that was a big thing to pull off because he was extremely nervous, but I picked the right guy. And, you know, I didn't blame him for being nervous, but there's a guy out of Philadelphia, still works today, named Mike Kalua, King Kalua.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
Years. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Mike was great. And I had no concerns, no qualms whatsoever. But, you know, Steve Williams was always a tough guy. I'd worked with him many times. But, you know, this guy had issues. I mean, you couldn't ignore that. And none of us wanted him to get hurt. But he didn't know Mike Kalua. They went out. They did their thing. When he came through the curtain, he said, "Sal, you were right. You picked the right guy. Thank you." You know, and, you know, sometimes you just have to know, you know, the people, the players, and make things work out.
Sal, let me ask you this, though. You're running this huge reunion, right? You're bringing all these mega stars in. Like, what's the stress factor that you have? Because obviously you've got a lot of money backed on this, and aren't you like, oh man, if I don't get enough people in here, boy, oh boy, I'm going to be in some financial despair. What's pressure like?
Well, it's a lot of pressure, but at the time we thought, and that's why these tapes were tied up, at the time.
Jimmy?
Ruh-roh. Ruh-roh.
Jimmy, how come the contracts that we signed don't seem to work, though?
I don't know. You got an hour? Or did we spend it already?
It's like, why do we got problems?
I don't know.
Sal's back. All right.
I don't know. Is he? Sal, are you there?
I thought he was
Where
back.
Where is he?
No, he's not back.
All right,
let's go to commercial break. Hopefully Sal gets reconnected because I want to show a video. And Jimmy, don't be so quiet. Ask some questions.
We'll be right back, I think.
I'm sorry, guys.
Sir?
Ah.
Manscaped?
Uh-huh.
You know, have you tried the new equipment that's been sent?
I'm afraid because it says weed whacker. I'm scared.
Maven, Manscaped, what are you thinking about Manscaped, dude?
Love it.
What do you use it for?
Necessity. What don't I use it for? Put it this way. The only hair I have on my entire body is these eyebrows.
Yeah.
That you see. These caterpillars racing to the middle of my nose. That's it.
That is it.
That's all I have. And that's all I want.
That's the
So bit. Manscaped is a must.
We were talking before the show. There's nothing worse than just hair.
Yeah.
Right? Hair on a woman, hair on a man, it's just bad.
Absolutely. And it's the one thing that the older I get, it starts growing more in unwanted areas.
Absolutely.
I hate it.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
Just going to go out there.
Oh, boy.
Go for it.
You're doing a deed.
Yes.
Again, I don't want you to have to admit this because we, as men, we try not to admit this, but if you're going to go do a deed on a woman,
I know
would you rather her be hairless or a little hair, racing stripe, or
racing stripe.
Full retro bush?
Racing stripe.
Retro bush is out.
Yes, thank you.
Retro bush is out.
Yeah.
I don't mind a small, well-manicured landing strip. Every now and then, if it's completely, and I'm talking like baby's ass bald, then I start, where is that pedophilia line? I don't want to wander into that.
That's very interesting. Like that.
I never thought about that. You're a smart dude. Holy shit.
So if the landing strip is clean enough for the plane to go in smoothly, you're cool with that.
If the landing strip has like I said, well manicured, you can see both sides. It's not
like blinking lights on both sides of that landing?
I don't want the shrubbery going off into unwanted areas on that.
Gotcha.
As well.
Gotcha. Yeah, look what you found. Ooh.
I gotta be all honest though. Hey, the older I get though, I don't think I can be as
I found it.
Have you ever gone down there and like just like she slowly brings down the underwear then?
What is
retro?
Absolutely.
You're like, whoa.
Wow. Yeah, like it pops out? Do you like walk out or what do you do?
No, I muster through. I muster up the courage to get
through. He's a trooper.
Yeah.
He's a trooper. Gotta give him an ace.
Wow. Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah, I couldn't say if you have the same beliefs as Maven does, Manscaped could help you.
Absolutely.
The weed whacker.
Absolutely.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that I may have to, like, you know, go in a room, close the door, and hang out with the weed whacker for a little while.
Yeah, I think you're a retro guy, aren't you?
I like 70s adult films, if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
but with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with this wrestling icon, Maven.
We will see you in a drop kick second.
Drop kick. All right, welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty Nefaro, where we've got the godfather of pro wrestling, Sal Corrente. Hey, Sal, can you say Brooklyn for me, please? And he's frozen.
I don't think he can even say Brook, folks. I don't know.
He was live. He was moving around. He's back. All right.
There he. Well, he's moving now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm here.
So, Sal, can you say Brooklyn for me, please? Can we get that off the off the ground?
Say Brooklyn?
Yeah. Well, he just said it.
He just
All right,
did.
I guess.
He just said it.
I'll tell you a funny story about that. About Brooklyn. There was an independent show being run by Mitch Seinfeld. And I was on it. And a guy named Bialo the Giant, who Herbie was his name. But he went as Bialo the Giant. He was a big guy. He really was. He was a great guy. Everybody liked him. He wasn't, you know, really seasoned yet. But Paul Heyman was managing Bob Orton that night, you know, long before Paul became, you know, what he is today. But he certainly had a reputation, been in the AWA and all that. And I've known Paul since we were both teenagers. Well, they were doing an in-ring interview. And, you know, Paul, of course, you know, wanted everything to be good. So he was running down Herbie just something terrible. And he takes the microphone, puts it behind his back, looks at Herbie and says, "Yell Brooklyn." I think we were in Canarsie maybe. Mitch would know for sure. But he says, "Yell Brooklyn." Herbie yells Brooklyn, place goes nuts. So then Heyman just tears into him again, puts the mic behind his back or puts the mic down, looks at Herbie, says, "Yell Brooklyn." But gives Herbie the mic, he screams Brooklyn. I think they did the same thing for a third time. And then I don't remember who threw the first punch, but Herbie's taken over on Orton. And, you know, Orton's not a small guy, but Herbie was just a monster. Well, at some point, I heard Bob yell, "Get me the phone, he's killing me!" Paul threw him that big old white phone. We're not talking about little phones like today. And he nailed Herbie with the phone, but it made me think of that when you said, "Say Brooklyn." I mean,
Sal, not to get back to Vince McMahon, but you know, we've seen, you know, a lot of the shenanigans going on behind the scenes, and you know, it's not always Vince's fault. There's been a lot of times that Vince has had to handle, you know, unruly employees and. And there's a lot of responsibility and stresses you've covered. As a promoter over the years, did you ever have to personally have to get a wrestler in line that was under contract with you? I mean, I'm sure it must have happened. I mean, if you're not comfortable giving us detail, did you at least experience that? Because wrestlers are definitely marchers to their own beat. A lot of them can be that. Did you ever come across any shenanigans that made you have to enforce or put your foot down with anybody?
Not much. You know, there were times that somebody wasn't necessarily cooperative, but, you know, they would, you know, there were a few guys I had to leave at home for a while. Let me say that. Guys that we used on a regular basis.
Right.
There wasn't a whole lot,
right.
You know, because first of all, I don't book troublemakers. And, you know, because to me, most people are somewhat interchangeable. Unless it's your headliner, the rest of the guys, everybody, every legend has their own built-in audience that people are going to come see. So you leave one guy at home, you bring another. As long as it's kind of equal, you do. Now, we had a sold-out crowd in Vermont one time. I mean, the place was literally packed. And I had to bring a replacement because I had a problem with somebody. And that didn't go over well with the promoter. And quite honestly, he said, well, we're going to cut your money. I said, well, first of all, you've got a full house out there. Secondly, you know, you had a WWF tag team champion. I brought you another WWF tag team champion to replace him. I don't know what else to tell you, but what I can assure you is this. You're not cutting the money because I still have to pay these people. Now, we'll either go home and I'll pay everybody out of my own pocket, or you're going to pay me what we were owed. And he said, well, look, somebody just said if I bullied you that you would back down. He said, never mind, don't worry about it. Well, I don't play that way. You know, business is business, and it certainly wasn't my fault that the talent wasn't coming, but they, you know, started making demands. And then, you know, I had a couple of behavior issues or a no-show. I'm not a big no-show person. You know, you no-show me. Well, you know, I've got to produce what I say I'm going to produce. And I always try to do things that you really can't see everywhere else. That was one of the keys of Wrestle Reunion. What I didn't want it to be was something anywhere in the country you could see on a normal indie card. And that's why we did things like put the Funks together, Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper teaming up. Mike Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo worked against Ron Bass and Larry Zbyszko. Of course, at the Wrestle Reunion 2, we had the whole Bruno Sammartino thing with Zbyszko, and I really wanted Zbyszko to work with Bob Backlund. For whatever reason, that was one thing I couldn't get worked out, but I really, really wanted that to be it. And Bob just didn't want to do it. I mean, plain and simple, he wouldn't even give me a chance to talk him into it. He just said no, and that was that for whatever reason.
Did Bob not want to do the show, or he didn't want to work with Zbyszko?
I don't know. You know, I told him what I had in mind. He cut me off. And to be quite honest with you, I didn't expect him to want to do it. And I knew what he was making, so I was prepared to offer him double because that's what I really wanted to headline the event. Whatever reason it was, I don't know. He wouldn't tell me. But I never even got a chance to tell him that I was going to double his normal guarantee. He just said no. And that's it.
Did he go full Bob Backlund on you and kind of put you in the cross-faced chicken wing? Or
we were on the phone.
Mr. Backlund?
What's that?
Like Mr. Backlund? He didn't get the chance. He was on the phone with you. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. No, now I've seen him do some stuff at autograph sessions. You know, look, I've been around Bob many times, but there's sometimes guys don't want to do something for a reason. And you know, you can't figure it out. It doesn't really make any sense. I had one guy who said he didn't want to work with somebody, you know, and that was what I wanted to do. And he pleaded with me. And, you know, I said, okay, it wasn't that important to me. So I said, okay, whatever. Well, then the other guy wanted to be on the wrestling show. I said, I got nobody for you to wrestle. He says, well, what about so-and-so? And what was I supposed to do? Tell him he pleaded with me not to wrestle you? You can't do that. So, you know, I found another spot. And, you know, things just work out. But now I'd say I've not had major problems. Now, I did have an issue with somebody who didn't want to do my event anymore because they were going to go back to WWF. And they figured they would just get me to cancel. And, you know, I wasn't going to do that. And so the argument got pretty ugly. turned out the guy ended up coming and being the best guy in the whole thing. Because he talked to, you know, I said, look, talk to Johnny Ace. He's not going to have a problem with you making my event. And when he talked to Johnny, I guess Johnny told me, he said, you know, he just figured he'd bully you so you'd cancel him. And I said, I told him straight out, he's not going to cancel you. And Vince isn't going to care. Just go do the thing. And turned out, like I said, he was literally the best guy to have. Mm. So, you know, sometimes things happen, but it's the wrestling business. You know, most wrestling people are not businessmen. They're people in business. And that's two completely different things. You know, they don't have people negotiating for them in most cases. They're doing their business themselves. But these are not people that are in business, even though it really is a business, a self-contained business. And promoters, of course.
Sal, of all the veterans you've had in, and you've obviously had a lot of veterans over the years, who would you say are the smartest? Give me like three names that were like, you know, really had their stuff together and were good businessmen. Just off the top of your head, I'm curious.
Never really. Well, of course, I never had any problem doing business with Bruno, you know, for sure. You know, and there's different aspects of business people. You know, the Samoans broke me in the business. You know, Afa could probably be challenging for some people to do business with, but man, this guy was sharp as a tack. I mean, he understood this wrestling business inside and out. And, he taught me a lot of that. So I appreciate it. But, I mean, you're hitting me with a question nobody's ever asked me. You know, because, I mean, negotiations are generally fairly simple. I may have to get back to you on that. I mean, now, there are
nice
guys that are smart.
I got him, Mike. I got him.
I know. When's he going to get back to you next year?
Sal, I want you to think about that one, and when you're on next time, that's fine. I can deal with that. That's cool. Well,
Tully Blanchard's a sharp guy, but look, I'm not sitting down going over. You know, it's like, do you want to appear? How much money? And guys, right. You know, they right. have their personal beliefs, and that's it. You know, right.
Can I ask you this then? I mean, obviously, sure. You give a lot of credit to Afa, and I completely get that. Do you think that's why Roman is so successful currently in this business? Roman Reigns just growing up in it and being such a natural and everything. That's gotta rub off on Roman Reigns, right?
Well, look, when I started in the business with these guys, they started bringing along the Tonga Kid. Rikishi, Yokozuna. I mean, I grew up with all of these guys. And every one of them was a natural, plain and simple. And yes, I'm sure the education that they got from their family certainly helped. There's no doubt about that. But they all started out just like everybody else. They got put in the ring and learned as they went. But, you know, the Samoans were really in-ring technicians. I mean, you know, when they lost the belts to Johnson and Atlas, you know, these guys went out there. And, you know, there are times, you know, maybe a team lets down when they're going to lose the belts or this, that, and the other. I remember Vince being extremely happy with the way everything went. And, you know, they gave the fans 100%. And when Afa took that chair shot from Albano,
magic.
You know, I talked to him later. He said, you know, there's a picture I've got of me and him in his hotel room with his head busted open. And he said, I told Captain, make sure you give it to me, man. And Lou did. That's just the way it is. But these kids are just natural athletes. They're unbelievable, really, how quickly they learn. The Tonga Kid started like at 15. I think he wrestled Johnny Rods in his first match. And those things help, right? You know, when you're working with guys like Johnny Rods, and you know, you're not going out there and being expected to carry the thing at a young age. You know, Samu started out in Texas. When he came in to New York, when Sika was hurt, you know, they went to Afa and asked him to work to start tagging up with Don Morocco, and he said, "Hey man, nothing personal." He said, "But I want to tag either with my brother or my son." And Vince said, "You have a son?" And he said, well, yeah. He said, we'll fly him down here. So they immediately got him down there, and he worked all the house shows. But they waited TV to get him to where he needed to be. You know, he wanted to go on TV sooner than they thought he was ready. But once he got on there, I mean, this kid became one of the best workers in the business. So, you know, it's hard to say, what does for one with the other. But I'm telling you, every one of these guys was amazing. From, we had Yokozuna. I had Yokozuna's first matches as a referee. It was called Rodney the Tank. We were over in Egypt. And, literally in his first matches, he was good. I mean, he wasn't great, but he was good. It takes time. You don't learn overnight. But I would say Roman has far exceeded, especially with his health challenges. And, you know, the Usos are certainly a great tag team. I was at a party for their mother. I don't know, when they were 9 or 10. And they're just two little twin kids running around.
So, right, Sal, the right. One thing, because I want to show the video, but people at home watching this, right, you have all this incredible, incredible footage that you've had that you mentioned on both shows that you had to go into litigation to get them back. Can you tell them about that? And then I want to show the sizzle reel, which it's from Elbow Productions. Is that you?
No. The thing was filmed by Clear Channel Live Nation. And because they didn't really hold up to what we understood their side of the bargain is, we had a big case in federal court. Bruno Sammartino came and testified. Jimmy Hart testified. It lasted about 8 days. It was a big deal. And then they didn't want to release the footage. There was a discussion over whether who owned what. Well, we certainly own the material, but they own the physical tapes. At the 15-year mark, I had my attorney reach out to them, and they said, he can have it back. We'll each side will indemnify the other. We don't care at this point. And, I will say I'm a little surprised that there doesn't seem to be more interest in these three different shows. You know, Dusty Rhodes was headliner in two shows. Terry Funk. The list is so long. Piper, Snuka, Matt Hardy, Bubba Ray Dudley, Devon Dudley. As a matter of fact, Wrestle Reunion 2, the Dudleys had just left. Well, we get an email from WWF saying they can't use the name Dudley Boys. Well, we booked them with the understanding that they were going to be the Dudley Boys. So, there was a call made, and, bottom line is we weren't going to risk it. So that's when Team 3D was developed. They came up with that name, and, we had the first match of Team 3D, and Matt Hardy was there, and that was a whole big thing as well. But, we got through all of that. I'm surprised there isn't more interest in these Legends tapes, but right now it doesn't seem like there is. I've reached out to WWF. I've reached out to AEW. What I will say about these tapes, the most important thing about them is these tapes haven't been seen by anybody except for the sizzle reel, and that's including me. You know, these things aren't in a viewable format. We, took some tapes and high spots, put the sizzle reel together after we had the stuff digitized. But that's about it. No one has seen this stuff. I mean, where are you going to get the Rock and Roll Express and the Fantastics teaming up against all three Midnight Express and Jim Cornette? Mm. Wow. I mean, these are one-time only matches. If you're not familiar with these cards, I mean, we booked the Dudleys in Davie, Florida, to wrestle Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey. It was going to be a six-man, but Stan Lane was busy doing his boat racing and just couldn't get there. So we were going to bring Spike Dudley too, but that didn't work out. But the Dudleys were thrilled to death to get the chance to wrestle the Midnights. And Joey Styles was there. And, you got Dusty Rhodes, probably the last time he faced Terry Funk in the state of Florida, if not, period. So there's all kinds of things that people that are fans of legendary wrestling would like. But right now, there doesn't seem to be a market for it. And if there isn't, then I'll just wait until there is. But, you know, I've got some ideas, and I'm going to probably reach out to Japan as well, because there's a whole different respect for the legends of wrestling in Japan than there is here sometimes. So we're going to do that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm stunned myself, to be honest with you. If the DVDs had come out before, you know, in 2005, we would have sold a lot of DVDs. Today, if you look, I want to be fair and honest. Everybody wants to take the stuff and stream it. But I think, you know, there has to be some consideration for the amount of revenue that went into generating these things. And if these things get streamed, they're going to be reproduced all over the place. And they're going to, you know, I'm sure some revenue will be made, but it would dwarf, you know, any realistic expectation. You know, but in the older days, we could have done something more with them.
I mean, not to stick on the negative, but like when you think you have this and it is gold from what you're showing and telling, it is gold. And then you're like, what was your expectation to get from them? And then what's it feel like when you're like, oh, man, I can't believe that there's not a market for this right now?
You know, financially, I don't know. You know, I can tell you there's, you know, a ton of money went into producing these things. You know, you're in the probably $400,000-$500,000 range.
Wow.
But my first expectation was, let's get an offer. You know, nobody's saying they even want it, which I just don't understand. You know, there is no wrestling footage, to my knowledge, that hasn't been seen somewhere at some point. Right? Anything WWE has purchased over the years aired somewhere. Right? Whatever Tony Khan bought with AEW, it all aired. Everybody's seen it. Nobody's seen any of this stuff. I just don't know of anything else that was ever produced that was never seen.
Sal, how many hours is it? And is it in a, do you have it already like in a cohesive like library? You know, chronological, is it like already packaged and ready? I don't know that much about it. That's why I'm asking you. I mean, is it ready to go as far as the material?
No, anybody that bought it would have to digitize it. And even if we digitized it all, they're going to want to digitize it themselves and so forth. Right. A lot of it is in HD. And there's about 9 hours worth of wrestling shows. But then we've got all kinds of interviews with different talent. There's a ton of B-roll. Okay. There's, you know, live QAs. I think we did one with maybe Steamboat and Jake Roberts, or Jake Roberts and DiBiase and Steamboat and his own. To be honest with you, it's so long now, it's hard to remember everything.
It almost sounds like it would be something that would probably be like a two-box DVD kind of situation or something, if you've got that many hours, I'm assuming. So first has to come packaging, right? And then you got to get the word out and all that other good stuff.
And that's
so it sounds like a lot of work.
DVDs are obsolete now, so it doesn't matter.
The time for DVDs is good. But, you know, with the streaming services, to me this is...
Right.
So, Sal, like when you get... Well, he's frozen again. So I'll ask you, Jimmy.
Is he? Yeah, go ahead.
When you reach out to the WWE or AEW, what's the conversation? Hey, I have this, and does someone just go, no? How does that work, Sal?
Basically, that's it. Yeah, no, we're not interested at this time. If we ever are, we'll let you know.
Wow.
It makes no sense to me. I mean, believe me, 18 years later, and I still get comments from people sending me messages. Hey, can I buy those matches? I'd really like to see that. Well, I'm sure that you would, but you know, we just don't have a way at this point to make it available that makes sense.
So in a world where I just bought a record and played it on my record player from Walmart, you're basically telling me, guys, that the DVD is now dead. When do you think it's coming back?
Never.
Yeah, not with all the streaming and video stuff out there. Look, you can't even buy a laptop with a DVD player in it anymore.
That's right. Yep.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. But it's the way it is. But, you know, the stress level of a wrestle reunion, I'll tell you, it's exhausting. And when we did it in L.A., you know, the way the building layout was, it was rough. I mean, by the time we were done running all over the place, you're completely exhausted because our events go on for 2 or 3 days. And but they were good, strong events. And, you know, they were very critically acclaimed. I think the first wrestle reunion, really, nobody believed it was going to happen. There were too many wrestlers, just too many people. Even Clear Channel called a few days before and said, look, we don't want to show up to an empty parking lot. And I said, what are you talking about? We've sold tickets. He said, we don't mean fans. We mean you. I said, me? Are you crazy? I said, I put my whole career on the line with this. I said, I'll be there. And, you know, pretty much all the wrestlers showed up. One got iced in. But other than that, everybody showed up. And, you know, the truth is that it was overwhelming at the first one. Dr. Tom Pritchard was a huge help. He had just been let go by WWF. So I immediately called him. I always liked him anyway. I'd known him since probably 89 and had him come in and help. But the guy that I didn't know, and I probably should have listened to Jimmy Hart a little bit sooner, was Colin Bowman, who ended up being the editor for the book. It got to a point where I didn't put on events without Colin anymore. This guy's brilliant. He has a great handle on all this stuff. He would have probably been somebody that would have helped Wrestle Reunion be even better than it was. But fans were happy. I've never heard from anybody. And, you know, what really bothers me the most is we had the 95 wrestlers. Autographs were more the thing than pictures were at that time. And, of course, the industry's changed. And, you know, so is the celebrity autograph show thing. It was mostly about pictures when I first started working in that. I'm sorry, it was mostly about autographs, but it's really morphed into, in many cases, more of a picture thing. But $299 you got to get autographs from all of these guys. You got all the QAs. You got the live wrestling event. And, you know, let's just say that. Well, I was being called I was a crook, and I was ripping people off. Are you kidding me? Today, you go to some of these events, you get one person for $299.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You get 95 of the greatest legends in wrestling that were available.
Bingo.
And I was a crook. It made no sense to me.
Right.
Sal, if you look back now, would you have not done all this, or are you happy this is the path you chose?
Well, let me say, if I went back in time with the knowledge I have today, certainly things would have been done differently, structured differently. Hindsight's always 20/20. Didn't have the information. I had a long meeting with Stone Cold Steve Austin at Diamond Dallas Page's apartment. I was on the way to the airport in L.A. and Page called and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm headed to LAX. He said, well, you better head over to the apartment. Steve's ready to talk to you. So I went over there and I talked to him for a long time, and he let me lay out everything. And then I met with his agent, and he decided not to do the event. In retrospect, we were probably better off that he didn't do it, because I think that would have been a name that would have pushed people that were concerned that maybe this event wasn't real and wasn't going to happen.
Right.
They might have taken the risk anyway. And quite honestly, we would have probably been overwhelmed.
What would the cost for a Steve Austin been for that show?
Well, he didn't accept, so I don't know. I mean, he didn't give me. But whatever it was, we were ready to pay it. I mean, look, there's a certain point where you say, forget it. But keep in mind, the kind of money that these guys are getting today was not being thrown around at that time.
Well, what year was this with Austin?
Well, I met with him in 2004. The event was going to be January 2005.
Okay.
But he was very respectful. Right. He let me lay the whole thing out. I mean, he knew I was a friend of Paige's, and he just let me lay the whole thing out. And, you know, we tried. But again, I'm telling you, we would have been probably overwhelmed. We would not have probably been as critically acclaimed as we were, because I really believe, you know, there's always that name that'll push you over the edge, right? We talked to Hogan, that didn't work out, and we talked to Austin, that didn't work out. You know, I did have Hulk show up at one of my later events. You know, and to be quite honest with you, he just showed up. We told people point blank, if you, because we were holding it at his restaurant. I told everybody, if you think that you're coming because you think Hulk Hogan's showing up, don't come, because we're not advertising him. I don't know why you think he'd be there. Of course, he'd be leading all the advertising if he was. But honestly, he just came over and did me a favor and, you know, just showed up, came in, gave a speech to all the fans. One poor kid had driven like 18 hours from Houston just with the hopes that Hogan would show up. He was a huge, huge fan, and he was disabled. Him and his wife came there. And not only did Hogan come talk to everybody, but, you know, he signed everything for free for everybody in the room. Now, if they'd have came out and supported the event, they would have got Hogan for free. You know, I appreciated the favor, certainly. I mean, it made everything, you know, fantastic. But again, if he had been there, you know, and advertised, I'm not even sure. The line would have been around the building, probably.
Right. Wow. And so you're basically saying it could be, you could get someone so big, you could just make the whole place, like, impossible to manage.
Well, the venues that we were using at that time, yes. You know, these are hotel ballrooms for the most part. And we just wouldn't have had the venues to be able to support what was going on, I don't think. And keep in mind, it's not like you're bringing in Stone Cold by himself. He was going to be like the 96th guy. Now, maybe there would have been a few less people, because at that point you've got that name and you know if people are going to come, they're coming for him. But I also was putting on a live wrestling card. Well, and I was putting together one-of-a-kind matches. Well, that takes a lot of people. So, you have to bring a bunch of these guys. But, you know, today these things are held in much bigger venues. You know, Michael from High Spots runs WrestleCon every year. Well, you know, after we did an event in New Jersey, I guess it was, I told Michael, you know, I really didn't want to do it anymore, that he could just take my hotel contacts and stuff, and he could just do his own thing. And so that's where WrestleCon was bought from. There are days that I regret that decision, and there are days that I'm thrilled to death that I made that decision. You know, that was the year that Bruno was going in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, that became an issue with WWF. And Bruno had already been advertised for what I was doing. And that was going to be a huge problem to cancel him out. And Bruno wasn't going to let me down. So he told WWF, look, I've already got this commitment to Sal. Maybe I can run over. Well, they didn't want that. They insisted that they had to have him the entire weekend. Mm. So Bruno told me, he said, you know, call Triple H. He's going to give you somebody to substitute for me. And we'll go from there. So I got some advice on who I should get. And I was told to get, you know, Lord Steven Regal. So I called Triple H. You know, look, they made me a great deal. At one point, I didn't think it was going to work out. And I told them, I said, I just don't think this is going to work. Well, you know, we kept talking and it worked. And, you know, they helped me out a great deal. And even though Bruno was replaced, Regal was the right guy to get. Because I told him when he got there, I said, look, you know, you're replacing Bruno Sammartino. I don't know if they told you that. He said, no, they told me that. And he said, I'm afraid that nobody's going to be interested in seeing me. I said, well, you see that line wrapped all around the building? Those are the people not interested in seeing you. Mm. And then I was starting to panic because the time was running out. And just Regal's just a great guy. And I said, Steve, look, I'm sorry. I said, the line is just, it's long. And, you know, I don't know what to do about it, but I don't want to turn these people away. And he said, Sal, I'm not leaving here until every single one of those people on that line gets what they want. And I started apologizing again. He said, Sal, I'm not leaving until every single person gets what they want. Don't worry about it.
Wow.
And, you know, so what could I say? You know, I've been very blessed to have, you know, luck, and I try to be reasonable. you know, the best I can. And we had a situation there, and I certainly didn't want to hold Bruno back from this Hall of Fame thing. To be honest with you, I had pushed for a long time for him to do it. Look, there's just been so many crazy things.
Well, I want to show you both something that's a little crazy. So the big event's next week. Jimmy will be back in New York. We're interviewing Jerry Lawler, Chuck Palumbo, Andre, the Giant's daughter. Really nice interviews. But I pulled up, you know, Jimmy, last year I went on my rant about A.J. Lee. All right, so the great Stacy Keibler will be in the big event. So I wanted to share the prices that Stacy Keibler will be charging. You ready? And then you and Sal can weigh in on it. You ready?
Please read that. Go ahead.
So for one autograph of Stacy Keibler, $139.
Yeah.
One pro photo op with Stacy Keibler. A pro photo op. Someone takes your camera and takes a picture. $149.
Yeah, right.
Stacy Keibler inscription. So if you want her to put two Sal Corrente, that's an extra $29. But if you're really fortunate enough and you want the VIP package with Stacy Keibler, that's four autographs and a pro autograph, a photo, I mean, on your phone. It's the low price of $549. Are you kidding me?
Well, this is what it comes down to, guys. Stacy Keibler probably doesn't need this money, and she's avoided doing any of these things for a long time. You know, from the celebrity world, I can tell you right now, there were numerous stars. You know, when Jerry Mathers finally came out, I ran into him and I said, Jerry, you know, we had an event. We offered you a lot of money. You refused to do it. I mean, it was way more probably than it was worth. But, you know, somebody wanted to have Jerry Mathers the first time. And he said, I wasn't doing them then, but I'm doing them now. He said, you call me anytime. You know, and, you know, there are guys that will make a ridiculous price or something that doesn't seem fair, and people will say no. But then sometimes they're surprised and people say yes, and then they have to go do it. Stacy has a price. The promoter's got to get back, you know, what they've put out. If Stacy Keibler can get the kind of money she gets, you know, the promoter has to charge accordingly and hope that people are willing to pay that. But do I think it's a lot? I told you, I gave 95 wrestlers for $299 and a live wrestling event, and I was panned as being a crook.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, I will say that I was always a huge Stacy Keibler fan, but, you know,
listen,
she's not out there working.
I understand, but there comes a point, like, I can't imagine, look, unless she's the most important thing in your life, I could not imagine forking out that kind of money just to get an autograph and a photo. I mean, honestly, Jimmy, Mackenzie Phillips is going to be there. I might go for a Mackenzie Phillips for $30. You know what I mean? But
right. You know, right. Well, Mackenzie Phillips is worth more to me than Stacy Keibler. How about them apples?
Listen, I love Stacy Keibler. I'm a huge fan of her. But I'm not a big enough fan for a photo for $549 that I'll never look at again. You know what I mean?
Well, you have to understand Stacy's agent is not going to the wrestling business saying, hey, we're trying to get Stacy work. Right? I know many people have tried to book Stacy over the years. It hasn't worked out. She's not really looking to do this. But if you make it worth her while, I guess she'll do it.
I heard was, ready, Jimmy? What she's getting paid for this event?
Go ahead.
Take a guess.
I can't. I'm sure it's thousands of dollars. I'm sure.
How about $100,000, Jimmy? So Sal's right. That is what it took to drag Stacy Keibler out of her home. Obviously, she's got plenty of money, right? But
I don't think it took that. I think you're a little bit south of the number, but
Wait a minute. Did you say south of the number?
Yeah, that means you think she got more than that?
Yes.
Whoa! Wow. Holy Jesus!
Hey, can I, Mike, can I just say, bouncing off Sal's comment, She ain't going to make it worth my while. I am not interested.
Hey,
next.
I'll add on to this. Yeah. I wish I could be reincarnated as Stacey Keibler. I'm serious, man. Holy shit.
Wow. You have a lot of cars.
There's only so long, you know, she hasn't done events, right? There's only so long and you could command this type of money, but she doesn't want to work and doesn't need to work.
Right.
Right. And, you know, Ray Kortz had the Hollywood Collector Show. That's where I got my start, out in North Hollywood at the Beverly Garland Holiday Inn. Then we moved it over to the Marriott. And there were times when he would tell the talent, I'm sorry, you can't charge that at my show. He said, my fans are not used to that. Now, certainly there are people that had more value than others, no question. But, you know, after a while, even he conceded. And I'll tell you why he conceded. Because as the people were raising the prices, people didn't stop getting on the line. And I'll tell you who one of the biggest ones is that kept raising his prices, Adam West, Batman. But you know what? No matter how expensive him or his agent put it, the people just stayed on the line. So what are you going to do? I mean, tell somebody, you're going to tell Stacey Keibler, hey, somebody's willing to pay you this, but I'm telling you, you're not worth it, so turn it down. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
All
the
I'm
promoter
saying,
has to determine what his audience wants.
This was my whole point about, like, AJ Lee. And I'm talking on a morality issue, right? You're a young kid, and you don't have the fortunate life of having parents that have a ton of money. You idolize. I idolize you, Sal. And I don't have any time. Like, never do you come to New York. And this is the one time you're coming to New York. I've lived and I've watched and I idolize you. And in order to meet my hero, Sal Corrente, I got to figure out a way to come up with $549. I understand that Stacey can get this money. I get it. But isn't there a point of morality here? And maybe this is why I should never be a promoter, because, Jimmy, I told you, when I did Roddy Piper, people were crying. They had no money. I was letting them get pictures for $5 because I just didn't have the heart, right? This is their hero. I didn't have that heart. And maybe I'm a sucker. But do you understand what I'm saying, Sal? Am I wrong?
Well, I believe America's a free country and people can charge what they want to charge. And there's all kinds of things that are out of the purchase price for somebody. If a promoter feels like, well, first of all, there's no gray area. You know, when her agents are making a deal, this is the deal. You either take it or you don't. And the one thing that I will tell you is in our wrestling business, you're running out of talent. I mean, you know, these people are either with the big companies and there's very few people that haven't done anything. You know, a guy like Rick Martel, who, you know, we had Martel and Santana at our Toronto event, but I can't get Rick to do anything anymore. He really doesn't want to go anywhere or do anything. He's probably more in demand than some of these other people because he hasn't been out for 10 years or so.
I'll tell you what, if you were lucky enough to get Rick Martel, you'd clean house. You'd clean house.
Well, right. But yeah. When we had him in Toronto, we had Strike Force there, and they were one of the biggest events. And I'll tell you, there's a guy, you know, unfortunately, sometimes people do things they shouldn't be doing. And people had told, and I knew Martel years before, but he didn't remember me. And unfortunately, we got into a discussion on the phone, and he wanted to be paid in advance. And I don't pay people in advance. Life happens.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a reputation for paying everybody. So he eventually said, well, then I'm not coming. I said, don't come. I said, it's up to you. I said, but I can't change the way I do business. Well, 2 hours later, he called and said, listen, if you don't mind, I'm still going to come. I said, of course not. Come on. So later, Tito told me that, and I knew, Mean Gene Okerlund told me what happened and why Martel went sideways the way he did. I don't want to start knocking anybody, but I understood. But Tito told me, he said, Rick, it doesn't matter what happens. You're going to get paid. Don't worry about it. I've worked for these guys for years. And, you know, sometimes people get involved and just do bad things that they shouldn't do. And you can't understand it or explain it. But it all worked out great. And I'm glad he came because other than Roddy Piper and Bruno, Strike Force was the most popular person's team at the convention.
And what did you charge for a Strike Force autograph?
Oh, geez, I don't remember. But you got to remember, this is 2012. I mean, things weren't crazy like they are now.
It's only 10 knows? Years. Probably,
yeah. Well, but that's things have changed a hell of a lot in 10 years. You know, as more and more people have come and people have raised their prices. The one problem I have with a lot of the wrestlers is this. They think if they bring in $5,000, they should be paid $5,000. Well, it doesn't work that way. I mean, there has to be, you know, that's like telling the promoter at an event you just wrestled at, well, the house was $100,000. Make sure you divide that all up among the talent. Well, that's crazy. It doesn't work that way. I don't know. Who knows? It was probably $50 for a combo or something. I let Michael at High Spots worry about most of that stuff. I tried to do more inclusive pricing where pay this, get everything. You know, now today the business is totally different. Most of the talent is brought in by vendors. And I had told Michael when we had a discussion, I said, I think it's time to be landlords rather than promoters. It just seems like that's the way to go with this thing. Mm. So again, did the autograph thing evolve? Yeah, it all evolved. Changed
Listen,
completely from the first event.
No one believes more in capitalism than I do, right? But I do think there comes a point that, you know, again, maybe
yeah,
some people lose their shirts a few times. Maybe this will calm down a bit. What do you think?
Well, sure. But again, in Stacey Keebler's case, she's not asking to work. You're interfering with her life. She lives in Los Angeles. She's got to fly in. She's tying up 3 days. And she's telling you, I'm good if you don't use me.
Yeah, right. I'm rich. I really don't really care if I do this. I get it.
Wow. I'm really wanting to meet her now. Keep going, guys.
So, Sal, want to thank you again for joining us. This was the last show in Village Connection. Sal, again, thank you for supporting the show as much as you have.
What does that mean, the last show in Village Connection? You're going to a different
studio? It's not in Village Connection. We're in Indie Music.
Indie Music, my God. Anyway, no, yes, we're going to another studio. The studio is closing, and
gotcha.
We're on our way to another planet. But, Sal, seriously, thank you for all that you do for us. And you're always a gentleman. You are a true entrepreneur and a leader of pro wrestling. And your stories are fantastic. And just thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. You know what? I did forget to mention one thing, if you don't mind. A lot of the legends, I don't know if you guys follow this Power Town Wrestling at all. If you don't, you probably should want to check it out on Instagram and Facebook. They're producing dolls right now that are dolls of people that nobody else ever put out, and they probably weren't going to put out. They weren't signed to WWE legend deals or anything like that. Very soon they're coming out with the Remco line of Bobo Brazil, The Missing Link, The Rock and Roll Express, Magnum TA, Tully Blanchard, and they put out these Elite Ultra dolls, they call them. A Bruiser Brody that was almost lifelike, Stan Hansen, Kerry Von Erich.
Ooh, nice.
You know, so
I'm
glad
to see. How about Adonis Ventura? Any Adonis Ventura dolls?
I would say I do not believe so. Anybody they're putting out is somebody that is not with. Now, they have a big roster. Pre-sales start tomorrow for the Remco dolls. But what I'm glad of is these guys that have never had dolls put out in some cases. There's going to be a Tito Santana doll. Tito's coming out as part of the Remco. And Tito's probably had dolls in the past. I don't know. But like the Missing Link, to my knowledge, has never had a doll. Bobro Brazil. You probably want to check out Power Town Wrestling and see some of these dolls. But it's a chance for the legends to bring in some money. And, I think that that's a great thing. You know, my heart will always be with the legends and the era that I grew up with. So it's good to see from that perspective there is an interest. And that's why I think there'd be an interest in the Wrestle Reunion tapes and why we made the sizzle reel to let people see what they get. Because if people are interested in these dolls, well, how about – and some of them go even further back than Bobo Brazil. But, they're looking at the territories and all different kinds of things and – you know, presenting to the old school fans. If there's a market for those dolls, I would think there's a market for the Wrestle Reunion tapes. But we'll see. I think Dory Funk may be coming out at some point. I mean, all different kinds of guys that you just don't see dolls of all the time.
Well, I'll be looking out for it, and I'm looking for the Adonis Ventura. Once again, Sal, thanks again. I'll talk to you soon. We owe you so much. God bless.
Thank you, fellas. You have a good night.
All right, buddy.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, Jimmy and Abe, we ran a little long. I love Sal Corrente. The guy's awesome. I was going to play the scissor reel, but I lost my balls because I was afraid to get a copyright, right? Because I wasn't sure if it was somebody else had it on their channel. And I'm like, man, I really want to show this because I think it's so cool what Sal's doing. But I'm like, after the whole Hannibal debacle where he reported us and got us a strike, I was a little afraid. Right. So before we go,
being smart.
This is not the end, obviously, but Abe, Indie Music TV, your last show with Monty Nefaro here at Indie Music TV, you're coming on with us to our next studio.
Absolutely.
But anything you'd like to share?
No, I mean, listen, guys, I really appreciate everything you guys have done for me. I never did anything like this before, and you guys welcomed me and let me make mistakes, and here we are. I mean, it's my favorite thing to do. It's my favorite thing I've ever been paid to do, so I appreciate everything, guys. And I'm glad to move on with you guys to a new place, you know?
Awesome. Jimmy.
Oh, boy. I mean, what would you like from me, Mike? A summary of how I feel about spent at Indie Music TV? It was fantastic. I mean, we did a lot of great stuff. We met a lot of great PRs, or, you know, a lot of great interviews. And I'm very appreciative of Abe. Abe has, I've known from the beginning that, you know, I judge people a lot of the time by how I feel what's coming off of them. And Abe was always someone who cared and still cares. And day one, if you care about something and you apply your love for what you're doing simultaneously, you get Abe. So I'm very grateful that we've had Abe, and I'm even, you got it, bud. And I'm even more grateful that I got you, Mike, because, you know, we both have our strengths, and I think we've played them like a symphony in the time we've had at that studio, okay? You know, you have your strengths, and I have my strengths, and we do a little Lennon and McCartney wrestling wizardry, and off we go. So I'm very, very proud of everything we've done there. The place has been good to us, we're just going to go forward because that's all you can do. I mean, once the Beatles got done with Revolver, what came next? Sergeant Pepper's.
That's it.
So that's how I look at life, and that's how I'll continue to look at this show.
Well, before you send us off, I'll just say this. Again, me and Jimmy started at this one studio, and we were just getting our feet wet. It was all for shits and giggles. We moved to another studio that was more of a ham and egger studio. And it was okay for us at the time because we were just doing it for fun. But once the show started growing, I give credit to my partner. He said to me, we got to move because if the production doesn't change, no matter what kind of quality we're sending out there, it's not going to work. So the owner of Indie Music, Chris Patty, welcomed us with open arms. We came here, and we've had phenomenal guests. We've been seen by over 150,000 viewers out of New York cable weekly. We got an appearance on Dark Side of the Ring. We've been in the dirt sheets. We actually had a newspaper article written about us on the show. And, you know, we've had some wonderful sponsors. And the most important part of this, we met the family. All these people that are on our channel in this room, from Phil DeCesare, ESO, Maria, Davio,
Amen.
Big 40,
Amen.
B40, Luce, RJ Hudson, Mitch Seinfeld, Jay Will,
Luce.
Matthew Holland.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there's some people that, if I'm missing your names, I apologize, but you know I love you. These guys have supported us from the beginning, and I'm only wishing Chris Patty the best with his future endeavors and whatever comes forward to him. And Jimmy, you'll be here in New York next week. We've got iconic Jerry Lawler in studio, which is going to be incredible.
Unbelievable.
And, we won't miss a beat. So thank you, Indie Music, for what you've done for Monty Nefaro. All I can say is thank you. Jimmy, send us on our way.
You've been watching Monty and the Faro. And until next time, we got a real big weekend coming up next weekend. Back in New York. Later.